Well, hello there. Haven't seen you around these parts before. Might I tell you a little bit about Reckless Nerd Out Nights every other week at Reckless Brewing Company's Pine House? It's a hippity-hopping time. Oh, seriously, guys, it's awesome. Every other week, we're hosting a sort of a game night at 6 o'clock p.m. to like 9 o'clock p.m. Monday nights. It's super, super cool. I'm gonna get in some magic this week. I'm so excited. I did a commander game of the day. It was so cool. And then I'll be running some one shots here and there. We're also getting some local DMs together to run one shots of their own. Seriously talented, seriously cool people. Please come by. Please check them out. We're putting tickets up on Eventbrite. Just search for Eventbrite, Reckless Brewing, Nerd Out Night. You should find us, grab some tickets the second they come up. You want to get them fast because they are selling out so quick. People are excited because it's awesome. So please, please, come on by.
Yeah, come on by Reckless Brewing, where we make beer.
More like a chew there.
Over the incident 2 days ago on the Morning Jewel. For those somehow uninformed, there was a misunderstanding involving Artash's involvement in the restructuring of Sansetian's government. His intentions in organizing a raid against the former Tresna and the CEO of Marfa Ironworks were called into question, and public opinions were hot. Now, I'm here to inform you that Artash has apologized publicly for this misunderstanding and will be pulling a majority of his forces out of Sansetian as a show of good faith. Local leaders such as Paloma Cruz, CEO of Freedom Ironworks, are being appointed to oversee the shifting of authority on the world in their stead. Anavazda, however, will remain the Speaker of Sansetian despite his roots in Ankaran Sengar. His appointment followed a legitimate election, and the people of Sansetian have swiftly accepted the party angel as one of their own. Artash insists that his actions were motivated entirely by a pursuit of greater justice and peace. He wishes more than anything to avoid such misunderstandings in the future, and expresses no small gratitude to those that pointed out his mistake.
Did we just win, or was it a sham election?
Because
that feels really easy.
I think we.
I don't trust him.
I think we just reamed it yourselves. I don't think we won. I think he's shifting tactics.
Well. Before we talk about political unrest,
yes,
I have something more important to talk about.
Okay, all right.
Now, see if you can follow my train of thought here.
Mm-hmm. Choo-choo.
We've talked about no takesies, backsies. There are some others I'm sure you've heard of. You smelt it, you dealt it.
I hate this train of thought already.
First come, first served.
Mm-hmm. All right, yep.
You snooze, you lose.
Okay, yep.
Two wrongs don't make a right.
Is there an end to this?
Possession is 9/10 of the law.
Are you reading
okay,
these?
That, you lost me on that one.
Okay.
Finders. Keepers.
Oh, what do you mean, Steven?
What do you want?
Do tell.
We were setting up for recording, I found on the floor,
ponytail.
Forgotten, a button.
Oh.
A physical button, the very same that we use in our game. And I declared Finders Keepers.
So that's a button I gave you that you dropped on the floor?
I don't know where the button came from.
Well, yeah.
How many buttons in your jar right now?
I have zero.
Did you have a button... last time.
No, I used my last button last time.
But
so it's not a
No, it is no. It is important to note how far this button was from David's position.
Yes.
This button was under the heater.
On the opposite side of the room is David.
On the opposite side of the room, the spot where Steven and I stand.
Keep our buttons. This button very well could have been mine at one point. Mm-hmm. It could have been Jeremy's at one point. Mm-hmm. I dare say, David, it could have been yours. But I found it. And I want to keep it.
So you're saying if I find a button, I can keep it and use it like I have the one button armed and ready, cocked in my DM pistol, aimed at old Johnny Franklin boy. You're saying if I found a button, I could have a second one?
I mean, I was
second button.
Well, no, I think that if you find a button, it goes back in your button container.
Oh no! Oh my gosh! All the buttons fell. Oh, all
right. Hey, well, you're not doing this in good faith now. Oh, I feel
one,
like
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and all the buttons on my shirt.
Well, so, that's a totally different argument. That's a totally different argument.
How is that? Those buttons Steven. Came off my shirt.
Oh, look.
Don't you dare. You can't do this.
Oh, look.
Buttons have buttons the power
everywhere over here.
I found those. I'm keeping them.
Buttons have the power that we give them. If you want to take buttons off of shirts, then you're going to cheapen the power that these white buttons that we all recognize have. I'm not declaring martial law over here. I am taking Finders Keepers to the brain trust here.
You're destroying capitalism.
So
you're destroying our economy.
So I think it is also fair then maybe we set the button aside on our side of the table.
Why your side?
And poll the pants people.
Is this appropriate? Is that an appropriate response, David? We'll let the pants people decide
where this
mystery button goes.
No.
Does it go to the finder or does it go back in the button economy jar?
How about this? SDM, I meet you halfway. How do you like that, gentlemen?
You're not getting another button.
No. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I am. Because we're not going to let the pants people decide. We're going to let the pants person decide. Because as we record this, I believe just yesterday was Genie's birthday. Windy yes. Luminary's birthday.
Yes.
Sakura Blossom's birthday.
It was.
I think she can decide where this button lands.
Ooh.
All right, I'm opening up Discord.
Ooh.
Don't hurry now. We can just,
why not?
Should we do the episode? Don't talk about the button.
All right, fine.
Yeah, it's more fun that way.
Okay.
Just be like, okay, cool. I'm fully on the spot in this moment. The world is watching.
Oh, no. You cannot put it on David's side of the table.
I mean,
we'll remember the choice you make. I have the best eyes, so it's just, yeah, you better drink.
Now that's a crack.
Drink to your loss.
All right, well, with that, not settled.
Not at all. So we got to keep them coming. It's like, oh no, who will the button go to? That's the hook. That's that. We got him. We got him by the place. I want Jeremy to mute me.
That you made a hand gesture with that.
You know what I'm talking about. We got him by
the zipper area.
We got him by the zipper. Pulling them in. They're like, oh my gosh, who will the button go to? We got to find out. Tune in next week. Don't drop the show randomly off of this week. And you'll know, maybe. If we get an answer before then.
This has gone on too long. I want to play a game.
Let's play a game. Yes. I've been doing a lot of goofing around, gentlemen. Mm. I've been, hear that. I've been putting this off for far too long. Little side adventure in the world of Danitu with old Stomp. Well, I'm in wrath. Little side adventure on the Morning Jewel, which turned into a bit of a bigger thing than I thought it would be. Your first time really meeting this larger-than-life character that's been around from the start of this show. Been seen here and there, but now your first conversation, and it got, I mean, intense.
That was spicy.
It was spicy. It was a lot.
It was a really difficult episode.
It was a battle, like a real struggle. Like I was saying afterwards, it felt like when he was about to walk off, you know, I kind of won out in those first two debates, and he was about to walk off the stage feeling so good, so sure of himself, and then, just like the figure beaten down, you know, just kind of standing up with the last of strength, Jules fires off one last remark, one last argument. One of the sons of Tian, he says, pulling me right back into a fight that I was sure I could win, only to be beaten brutally, humiliatingly on the network in front of the eyes of thousands. He's a hero, guys. How could you? You jerks. You monsters.
And then the election and the Pari Angel wins. I don't know.
That already happened.
Right. I know.
Artavaza had already won, and it was legitimate. The people were very happy.
Yeah, but, I mean, Atosh was still there at that time. Like, he was still there in full force.
Who's to say what really happened?
Who's to say? But yeah, all sorts of intensity, all these little misadventures. Some time has passed, some days. But the time has come. Tomorrow, the March of Ice begins on Nuari. So before we get into that, before Jean Franklin comes to the Ugly Coyote with a request for his partner. Some great desire behind his eyes, some great need. Before we touch on that, let's talk about what happened directly after your interview. You've heard a bit of it from a storyteller, Oren. Atash has pulled out. He's no longer overseeing the sort of restructuring of Sansetian and of the city. And so the world is sort of left to flourish more or less under its own governance. Perhaps this is a very, very good thing. Who can say what could have been had this little misunderstanding not happened? Artavazda, however, will remain, which, if we remember the conversation between Speaker Sholay to Crispin and Dresden, this was Atash's true aim. She believes the speakers, the real power, gaining two speakers, or losing two enemy speakers and gaining one for himself, mm-hmm. to really offset the balance. Perhaps Sansetian itself never really mattered that much. He would have been happy to have it, but the real power, the real goal, remains in hand. I have to sell your efforts short, because what you did was big. To demonstrate that, just the next day, because with how fast these jewels move around, with sending stones, all this stuff, letters can move very quickly throughout the Concord worlds. It's only the next day that one arrives at the Ugly Coyote for jewels.
A letter.
Did a little boity bring the letter?
I think just looking at it, smelling maybe the little bit of sweat smell coming off of it, and just seeing like the, hey, come on, okay. The sort of kind of rough, non-floral handwriting across the front, you realize this is from Gabriella. It's from Dance.
Oh, shit.
As you all read it, in her very sort of terse, kind of like straight, kind of way of writing, you just read, Jules, I watched you on the Morning Jewel. Many here do not understand what you have done. They did not see the danger brought on by the Celestials, but I did see. Thank you. You have made our world better. You may have saved me as well. The angels were unhappy with things I have said to the public. They were watching me too closely. Thank you. I also noticed how scrawny you look on the network. Return here soon so I can build your muscle. I have been considering some new grapples and need a partner I can try them on. They are pictured below. And as your eyes move down, there's a number of sketches that I think turn Jewel's loot beet red. Probably slides that close. What's that? What are you reading?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing.
Why is your loot weird?
Nothing. Go. Go.
Okay.
P.S. You up?
So that's that. Have you been visiting? It's been a while since Sansetian. Have you been going back and forth here and there?
Once, maybe, I think.
Oh, yeah. Maybe a little easier now that the, because you went back before, it's like things seemed peaceful, but there definitely was this like air of tension that you felt seeing the sort of forms flying over the streets, these bright lit pari angels watching over everything with their glowing pupil-less eyes. Just unsettling. Though the people cheer when they walk by, or flew by, Gabriella did not cheer, just glared up, unsure, untrusting. What you have done was a great service to her. And despite the lack of any sort of flowery language, you could feel the emotion poured into these words in this letter. The relief and the gratitude. You should visit soon. But first... We got an arc to do. Let's talk a little bit about other things that are happening in the meantime before we just go on and dive in. There are two return Cherry Delights have started helping out around the Coyote. There's a little fear now of any attempt from the LaRoche family to have them taken away again, now that the LaRoche family have been essentially removed from power. Even Arya himself has come in from time to time, only giving a knowing smile and nod at their sort of presence here. The Shield Bearers have no one left to make a demand to do this. Sholay herself was offering to essentially try to get them back to protect them, and so you know that they are safe, Jules. Ar'halon has set up his conspiracy board as promised, but not at his apartment. He actually, for the most part, has fully moved out. The solitude there was not doing him any favors in this time. And while he has visited the Coyote frequently to ask Fibro to look into specific terms and bits of lore to chat with you and even to visit with the Miskin Round stuff from time to time, he's not staying with you guys there either. No, Arhuan thought it was a fine time to move back in with his mother, and he'll be staying at Xena's home for the foreseeable future.
Whoa.
Someone else that needed a break from the solitude.
Yeah,
fair. Poor Xena.
Yeah, but in a way, in losing one son, I guess you could say she had one returned. There was almost a coldness there before that seems like it's been mending. Now that Arhalon wakes up every day to his mother's presence again. Perhaps there'll be joy found. But that's not our story. That's a different story. One to be played out in the sidelines. Moving to our story, let's talk about Blanche. Blanche, you remained on the Citadel following the incident on the Morning Jewel. And this was by order of Lord De Piero Montelio. Following the recent murder of Prince Amalmata, Prince of Coin Amalmata, he has grown concerned that something nasty could happen during his son's journey to the city. Now, your men are well-trained, your Tortles, your guard. You know they will see the Tortle Lord delivered safely to the city without you. I think you would know some of the incident involving Amalmata. You were obviously aware of major events, especially revolving around the Princes of Coin and Kings of Coin of Noari. So you know that basically this a bloodletter protest, these revolutionaries that have come up, masked and wearing stained aprons, stained with jelly-made dye, went wrong, just broke bad. Some folks just rushed a cart carrying the prince, and he was killed right there in public. Those that committed the atrocity have been taken in by the Silent Verse, the sort of militarized police force controlled by the Kings of Coin. It's going to be a quieter sort of celebration this year, as it seems like one King of Coin will not be involved. And maybe another as well, because tragically, Messer Solen Avim, the King of Coin overseeing the Weaver's Trade, also will not be attending, as his son died a month ago in a horse-riding accident, trampled by his own mount. Must have rolled a natural one.
Fishy. Fishy.
Now, they happen. A lot, honestly.
Yeah.
Horses in these worlds are just terribly dangerous.
Does Blanche know anything about the politics between the Kings of Coin? Something that she could link these two incidents together with?
I mean,
you know, maybe a certain political stance that these two share? Or shared?
I will say this. The Kings of Coins are amiable. And as far as linking them together, maybe you've looked into this a little bit. I mean, you seem like the kind of person who's very careful. There were plenty of witnesses. Plenty of witnesses. It was just a horse riding accident. Horse just went a little crazy. Just trampled him. Nothing really to it.
I don't buy it.
These freak things happen. Perhaps they just wanted to limit the amount of people in this arc. Who knows?
Okay.
Or perhaps there's meaning. I'm not saying there isn't. I'm just saying
sure.
Wink.
I'm just saying wink.
So Jean Franklin must be your concern now. You've been instructed to see the boy brought to Xenda into the palace of Amos Nir, the sort of Grand Messer, the King of Coin that oversees the jelly trade, the richest and most powerful of the lot. De Piero expects this to be a battle for you, as he expects his stubborn son to skip the festival entirely. You know that is not going to be the case. Jean Franklin wants to return for his own purposes.
Yeah.
And so, if there's nothing else to be done beforehand, I'd like to open up on a scene within the Ugly Coyote. Perhaps sitting at a table downstairs late at night, candlelight sort of flickers along the bar, maybe a fire in the chimney place. That's what you call it.
Close. Try again.
A chimney in the fireplace. Is that better? Anyway. scene is comfortably lit. Jean is sitting at a table, maybe Blanche by his side, Jules on the other. I'm assuming that Jean has told you all of his suspicions over his father and the other Kings of Coin. His discovery of the note his father left. He believes they committed murder. He believes that the jelly flower was essentially this barter they did not intend to see their side of. And so they murdered the person, this Edun figure that he's read about in order to get the flower for free.
I mean,
monsters.
If we're partners now, I really hope he'd tell me all of that.
I'm assuming he has, because I don't want to say it all again. Perhaps he laid it out here, perhaps he laid it out elsewhere. In this moment, I'm assuming that information is out there.
And so we begin on this. Tomorrow, the March of Ice begins on Noari. Now, every year, the city of Zinda holds what they call the March of Ice. This is, in essence, a celebration of wealth. A chance to engage in unbridled hedonism for 10 full days. They dress up some actor to play as the masked prince of ice and lead parades all through the city. Basically just a non-stop citywide carnival. Utter madness, if you ask me. What is important is that on the first day of this march, the kings of Coin always meet. They are invited to the palace of Grand Messer Emosnia, the king of Coin that oversees all jelly trade. The affair is quite closed off. All but the most necessary of staff are removed, and the king's families are, for the most part, barred from entry. But there are some exceptions. The heirs of the kings are invited and expected to attend. As my father's heir, I will likewise be allowed. I'm sure, given the recent surge in revolutionary activity and the death of the Prince of Coin Amamata, they will not stand in Master Blanche's way as well. She is my father's master defense, after all. The kings also make an effort to bring in the highest of entertainment. Typically divas from Zinda's Elucidarium. Hell, I heard that Diva Luma would be performing this year. Quite a catch. You might know this is actually a luminary, a skilled battle diva who's basically like, you know, rose from the Elucidarium, this sort of bard college in Zinda, to become like a sort of figure known by all worlds. Singer, dancer, just all-around cultural icon. So, I am going to attend. I'm going to play the good son, stand by my father, participate in negotiations, all of that. But I could also bring you in as entertainment, Jules. You're certainly famous enough, and rumors have been all over about your musical talents. You and Blanche could look into things behind closed doors whilst I fulfill my duties as heir. I know you about the concerns, Jules. I understand. The child is still missing, and there's so much to do, but you've told them all, the worlds, all of them, to distrust figures and authority. Hell, we kind of overthrew a government on the last world. I say we go two for two, huh? A full expose on the crimes of the kings of Coin. What do you say?
You think they're really going to let me set foot in there?
I think their curiosity will overwhelm their concern.
I could use that.
Everyone's waiting to see what Jules LaRoche can do. You realize you're one of the most spoken of people here now in the world. That what we polled there on the morning jewel,
he still like sweats thinking about it, like almost shakes. Atosh was his hero. He just stood before him, yelled at him, and like just shakes his head.
I can't believe it, but this, I mean, it skyrocketed you, Jules. Everyone knows your name. And we've heard you can sing and heard you can perform. You have that lute on your back all the time, glowing and looking all cool. I mean, this will be the first time you've had a public...
Yeah, cooler than you, right?
Beside the point. This is serious talk for serious luminaries.
All right, we're serious. We'll be serious.
All right.
Super serial.
All right. Look, if you're willing to do this, well, let's just say you've already approved you for invitations. You're actually already in, but if you
Jean.
Don't want... Okay, yeah, well, yeah, sorry, I went above your head, it's, but I thought you went to...
It's for you. I'll do it.
You'll do it? Really?
Of course.
Oh, this is great. I mean, Master Blanche could see to it herself, sure, but with someone else there to watch her back. I mean, this would be, oh, it would be excellent. And besides, I don't know, and he kind of looks over to you, Blanche, like, how willing she's going to be to investigate the lord of the house for murder. I don't want to put you in that position, sir, but...
Well, Tadpole, I can tell you that I'll be there, and my participation, that will depend on you convincing me, I suppose.
Well, all right. Yes. Well, it's time for that. Time as we build forward into it. I know I'm right, sir. I know I'm right. And you know. Right, Jules?
I trust you. Of course I do.
Just this big... total smiles, big blue eyes.
You just give
beaming,
a little shiver.
Yeah, he shivers. Like, yeah, I'm in the moment. He's excited.
This has been all I've thought about for months, essentially. I've been building up to this. It's why I left in the first place. Why I worked for that damned villain, Rune. All for this.
Well, you don't have to bear that alone anymore. We got you.
Yeah, we got you.
You hear a voice from the stairs in the corner of the room.
And don't you think Jules is going anywhere without a backup singer, right? Jules, right?
And Chester kind of nervously starts moving into the room. Kind of, everyone kind of like goes quiet, sort of feels something. Some kind of unspoken tension, maybe.
I don't understand the significance of this.
Sir, we should stay quiet. You just got raised his hand. Jules, hey, look, I know what you're gonna say. I know you're worried, right? But I'm good. I've had time. I've recovered. I've rested. I've thought things through God's breath. Look, it was rough, and I understand. I lost my stuff there for a minute, and thank you for telling me not to go, because it was good for me to have a break, to put things in perspective, to feel better. But I do feel better, and I've been training. I'm stronger. I got magic now. Remember, you did that whole loot thing. I got fairy powers. I don't know.
Jules looks down at Chester. How does his face look? Describe his expression, his eyes.
I love this. I think you look down at Chester and you see, like, as you kind of look down, as you're kind of like, I guess, looking into him, he looks up at you and his eyes kind of just grow hard and determined and defiant. And superimposed over this, we have this moment of Cerise looking down at her young teenage son. Young Jules looking up with those same eyes, that same expression of, go ahead and tell me no. And we cut back.
I got one more for you. Jules looks over to Jeans.
Tell me
the look on her face.
Begrudging acceptance. I think you actually see her slowly nod. I think what hurt her most was the way he was acting after God's breath. The way this trauma had sort of buried something dark within him, but you don't see that anymore. He's been at rest for a month. He's been actually like talking to someone. He's been with Jeans somewhat seriously for a while now. And the Chester you're seeing before, you're starting to realize maybe like sometime in this last month, his birthday happened. Maybe now he's 16 years old. And maybe just in the midst of all of this, he just looks so much older.
Okay. Jules moves his gaze back to Chester and then over to John Franklin. I don't go anywhere without my backup singer.
Oh, yes! Yes! Oh, yes! Yes! Oh, sorry. Play it cool. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's... Yeah, I'm in. And it's gonna be real chill and cool and stuff, because we're going undercover. We're going undercover.
Don't die.
Foreshadowing.
Oh, God. And, like, there could be danger. There's always the chance of danger. You know that as a player. Jules knows that as a character, but... This, what's coming now, it sounds pretty simple. You're just going to go into a party and investigate. And hell, when it comes to sneaking around, snooping, Chester's the man. He can even teleport now. And you get to decide what his other Fey Touch spell is. Don't need to do it tonight. If you want to, you can. But you can also wait, because I don't think we're going to need it yet.
No, I'm going to think on this.
Hell yeah.
Also, Steven, did you hear? This could be simple. This is going to be easy.
It's going to be so easy.
Yeah. So simple.
Walk in the park.
Uh-huh.
Walk in the park. Perfect. Nothing to be scared of.
I love this.
Just don't roll in that
we
one.
We deserve this.
Don't get trampled by horses. And you're good.
Welcome back, Chester.
Welcome back. Feels like it's been so long.
I mean, it's been like 40 episodes.
Yeah, it has been a long time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Holy hell. Okay. With this, perhaps the night turns to day. Jean's plan involves you all leaving in the morning, because in the morning the March of Vice begins. By early afternoon you are expected at the palace of... I need to start getting
what palace, David?
Names right in my brain, because like I got there's so many new names.
Yeah, we should print out a sheet.
Oh my gosh, that's the best idea I've ever heard. I'm still using Notepad. I haven't gone to Google Docs yet. So
David!
I lost these notes three times.
Pants people, revolt. Revolt.
Oh, wait, it's in the bottom. Hang on. Amos Near.
We're going to start a campaign to get David to
make David
Google Docs.
Use Google Docs.
You'll never get me. Without further ado, morning comes. Anything you want done beforehand. Chester's getting ready to go. He's loading up his stuff. He's excitedly packing his bag again, packing some stuff into your... You still have that handy haversack given you by Orin. Just, you know, basically almost a bag of holding in itself. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think there's a big contrast between Chester's energy and Jules' energy. I mean, Jules, he's not, like, sulking or anything. He's just kind of matter-of-factly getting things together. He's done this before. You know, he's seasoned.
It's a fake nose. Look at this. Huh? Who am I? I'm not Chester. Who am I? I'm not Chester. I'm a fake nose man. Anyway, so it's going to work.
Hey, where'd Chester go?
Yeah, see? Look at that. He's smacking, like, all sorts.
I'm going to remember that you put that in there, because that might come in handy sometime.
Unless we had a fake nose. Stupid. Okay. And perhaps you are all off. Blanche, you've been here for a few days. Time for your homecoming. But more importantly, time for Jean Franklin's homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
The first time he'll be stepping foot on Nuari in a while. There could be hidden dangers lurking for him. He is part of this merchant monarchy after all. So these revolutionaries are something to be concerned about, of course.
Right.
This is a matter of him trying to investigate your lord for murder. That's, I imagine, some kind of conflict.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Jules said it best. Jules said that he trusts Jean. And of course Blanche trusts Jean, but the accusations are heavy, you know?
Extremely.
So...
How many governments is this little turtle going to make you overthrow?
Right, exactly.
last time he was like, hey, Blanche, tiny little adventure, come with me. Like, you overthrew Sansa Tion. Right.
And now he's dragging a teenager along into the, you know what I mean? Like, Blanche is a soldier, you know, and she's unsure about this kid.
You know what's funny, though, is speaking of teenagers, and on this note, I looked at my notes. Jean's 18.
Whoa.
He's actually pretty young, too. Yeah, he was actually younger than Zebulon. I didn't realize that until I saw my notes. I was like, oh, wait, Jean's 18 years old? Damn.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he was a lordling.
He's a tadpole.
He's a tadpole.
Just gaining his little tadpole legs.
Exactly. And you know, as long as Blanche has been... I mean, because, you know, we've all seen TV shows. They train these lordlings from a young age to fight in battle. And Blanche has been there and has seen that training and has done that training with Jean. Chester is a little bit of a wild card for her.
Yeah.
Fair. You know,
maybe she's sizing him up as a seasoned veteran sizes up, you know, a greenhorn on the battlefield.
Roll me an insight check.
All right.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's really cool.
You fashion yourself a soldier, do you, boy?
Nope.
Just a 9.
With just a 9, I think you see this boy with his sort of casual, laid-back atmosphere. His sort of like, you know, he just seems too easygoing. His shoulders, kind of slumped. His posture, just in that posture.
I think Jules will look over to Blanche, and when everything in the world is unconventional, there's no time to be conventional. That didn't sound near as cool as it did in my head.
I didn't hate it. I liked it. What's interesting, though, is what Jules knows that Blanche doesn't know is that there are other ways to form a soldier. Sometimes a soldier is formed by their mentors. Sometimes they're formed by the world around them. Chester, who grew up in the streets of Cerule, was fending for himself, who essentially mentored Jules in the ways of the street. He's got his own kind of wisdom, his own kind of power that is really hard to understand. And as you look at him now, Blanche, you fully don't understand it. He just looks like a kid.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't have to convince Steven. Blanche is a different story.
Even though he's dressed up, he's got his armor on. He has chainmail, I believe. He has a bow on his back. He's looking like, you know, pretty solidly built beneath it. And he's been training. He's been doing his push-ups. He's bulked up a bit. But he still just looks like a kid. No discipline in that one.
No discipline in the youth.
Telling raunchy jokes the entire way forward.
No discipline and no posture. 2 weeks under my tutelage and I'd have him ship shape.
I cannot wait to see that, like, side episode.
Who's that, Toots?
Oh my god, yeah!
I'm just trying to make Blanche as nervous as possible about this whole thing.
You approach the plaza. You approach the passage of respite where the Bastite Conquered Jewel is coming to dock.
Sorry, I get to use the sound effects again.
It's a sound effect. Bastite's pretty cool. It's like a sort of almost maroon with a sort of mesh of like a mossy green color. I was kind of trying to figure out what this looked like, and it's kind of weird looking. It looks cool, but it's kind of a cool marbled maroon and mossy green. It's sort of boom, boom, comes to dock. Very beautiful. You are approaching it, and I think you see kind of maybe breaking out, or you're leading up in an alley just like pretty close by. Kind of off to the side, somewhere in the shadow, and yet so open for you to see, as if waiting for you to see. We see the figure of Dresden Kellig, who perhaps brings Jules over with a signal. Or Blanche. You guys were good buddies in that last world.
You know, I don't even think there's a signal.
No?
I think they just know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Why else would Dresden
Why
be
else
here?
Would Dresden be standing there, yeah?
We just go off to the side. Your words drove a dagger into Atosh the other night. His guard is up now. But Speaker Chollet is going to be looking for a way to twist the knife.
You sound so cool.
After a brief pause. And don't worry about Paul. Calypsonia won't harm him. She needs him. Speaker Chollet has her eyes and ears scouring the worlds. She will find him. And you'll be the first to know. And then, without a second moment, wisps away.
Hell yeah.
Bye-bye, soldier boy!
Was it the echo?
Ooh!
That's so,
yes!
Oh my god, it's so,
yes.
Ah, it's so cool!
Yes, that's fantastic. So cool.
And like, probably I like to imagine Dresden couldn't like speak to the echo before, but like where we left them off, they were going off to learn more about their innate powers, talking to the incarnates.
Oh, so cool.
Perhaps there's a little more to Dresden, a feeling of power that wasn't there before as he vanishes before Jewel's eyes.
I love that so much.
So cool. It's so cool.
Then Jules walks back to the group, I think, with a little more hope that he's had recently.
Hell yeah. Knowing this, having this little weight off your shoulders, maybe you can feel better about diving into a wacky misadventure with Jean, knowing that, hey, the ultimate power of, like, spying. The ultimate, like, eyes and ears on every world figurehead. Chollet Brass has got your back in this. If anyone can find Paul, it's going to be her. All that there is to do now is wait and see how you can make the world a better place while you do, perhaps. So this party moves forward, approaching the Bastite Conquered Jewel. Climbing aboard. No trouble now getting everyone on because, hey, you're pretty high ranking. At this point, when you say, you know, the kid's with me, they let Chester right on. No invisibility hijinks, nothing like that. You're good to go. We're done with Ritz. I'm bored of him. I don't care anymore. That's how plot points work on this show. It's a good show, damn it. And so you enter the jewel, you sit down, and it rises, and there's a cool sound effect, right, Shmian?
This time I will put it in.
Thank you.
Because I like this one.
And, boom, you are in another world. The Conqueror Jewel is packed, loaded with people. Everyone's coming to Zinda for the March of Vice. I mean, a lot of people from other worlds want to be here too, because it is just a nonstop party. Parades everywhere, people throwing magical like gem beads everywhere. Just a good time. As you're sort of moving down, coming down to dock, Jean sort of importantly kind of, I think some haughtiness has returned to him as he's sort of coming back to his world, kind of falling back into his element, much like the party on Saint-Étienne. Just, well, here we are. Look at all these people. Ugh. Disgusting. Well, I mean, it's just, they flood the city. It's terrible.
Right back to it, huh?
All right, fine, Tosh. I'm just...
Have you learned anything?
Yes. It's like the running Jules. Jules' best dad. All I'm saying is Father had better have sent an elephant. My long-awaited return deserves at least an elephant. Right, sir?
I'm perfectly capable of walking, Jean.
Yes, we could walk, but they're gonna walk. Points to, like, everyone. We should have an elephant. See you done. Okay, don't. Fine. Fine.
You wanna get on my back?
No. A little.
Jewel,
roll rest. For strength.
You'll die. Jewel rests, docking down at the bay. The ramps are leading up to it. The door sort of slides open, and everyone starts spilling out.
It'll do you some good to walk with the people, Jean.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I am a prince of coin here. I have to be seen as such. I mean, I'm going into the city. I have to make an appearance, right? Right? Right?
Everyone loves a man of the people.
Yeah, man of the people right here. Right, Jules? Come on. Sort of give me the side thumb. Much like Subsunko, you are struck immediately by humid, hot air as you phase into Noiri, as this door opens, as boom, it hits you. And as you're stepping out of the Bastite Conquer Jewel, you find yourselves in a tourist travel depot surrounded by lush, lush jungle. The hum of insects fills the air, playing harmony to an orchestra of bird song. And this is all buried behind the general chatter and commotion of people. Just people all over, swarming the information, souvenir, and food stands, and negotiating for rides into the city on ox or horse-pulled wagons that are all sort of set out in a line just in front towards this sort of main pathway that leads through the jungle, a very open, wide path towards the sort of jelly fields and the city of Zinda in the distance, maybe a half hour's journey by cart. Standing out amongst these beasts of burden, though, is a mount of much larger size and prestige. Jean's eyes sparkle as he squeaks out, sir, it's an elephant! And you see a white-painted open-top cart attached to a great gray elephant with mild eyes. A rider sits atop the elephant on a golden-embroidered saddle, a brown-skinned halfling in a white uniform, black hair and beard just trimmed immaculately, who just sees your party just step out. Jean, I think, runs forward, just fully, like, knowing, this is me, right? This is me. The sort of pilot looks down just like, you are Jean Fligamontelio, yes? My name is Taran Hal, and I will be your ride into the city. And John just, yes, whoa, it's an elephant. Sorry, composure, man of the people. It's an elephant.
Blanche is unsure about this. I mean, you know, there have already been two prominent political figures who have died, one by his own mount.
It's a thing.
But that was in that one. They happen.
So Blanche is a little.
This is an elephant,
unsure.
Not a horse. It's not a horse.
And I'll be honest.
Wait, you want to roll a die about it?
I want to roll a die about it.
What kind of die you want to roll? What are you being honest about over there, you liar?
While Jules does trust Jean Franklin, in a scenario like this, he understands that Jean Franklin's decision making might be a little shaky, you know, and he's definitely following Blanche's lead.
Okay.
I'll say that.
Go ahead and roll insight.
Roll insight. There's also crit my pants.
Crit your pants, okay.
All over this bastard.
Yeah.
Why don't I have a crit my pants sound effect yet?
I don't know.
Whoa.
What would that sound like?
I'm slacking. Oh, you're going to find out in a few days.
It's going to be bad.
Oh, my gosh. It's going to go right. Shmia.
No.
Darn it. I tried. You're looking into this. For one thing, with that insight check, I'm going to give you a twofold. First of all, De Piero Montelio. He would do this. He would want Jean Franklin to become as over the top as possible because De Piero was always frustrated by how the other Kings of Coin treat him. They see him as lesser because he's not a turtle. Because he is a turtle. Sorry. And they're all, you know, turtles just aren't seen on the same level as everybody else. And so he's kind of like, he wants to put on the show, like, we're as big as you guys are. My son's riding on an elephant. You know, this is classic De Piero. This is not, there's nothing nefarious about this. He would have hired this guy.
Okay.
Looking at the guy, yeah, he seems everything that he is. He doesn't seem to be concealing any sort of weapons. He seems genuine. You feel pretty secure as you like look at him. You scan it over. With that 20, you've probably seen this guy before. Taran Hal's probably like well known for just being a pretty famed limousine driver essentially, sure, of Noiri. So it's just like that.
Okay. So he gets the pass. Blanche isn't quite done.
Okay.
Blanche is going to pull out her eyes of minute seeing.
All right. Ooh.
She's going to walk up, you know, behind Jean and call up to the driver. Question, is the elephant a male or female?
It is a female elephant. With your eyes of minute seeing, peek right up in there, real close.
I knew it.
It must be. Yeah, it's a female.
Your mount. What do you call her?
Penny.
A fine beast she is. And Blanche puts on her eyes of minute seeing, which
give, what are you doing down there?
Which grant her advantage on investigation checks. You can see much better than normal out to a range of 1 foot. So okay. Kind of as she's walking up to Penny, you know, she's checking out Penny's feet. She's checking out the harnesses
Sir,
that are holding
the... embarrassing me in front of the elephant.
She's...
That's all right, John. It's better to be embarrassed and live than to fall off an elephant and, well, not.
We're riding the cart, not elephant.
So I'm trying to just roll investigation on, like...
Roll investigation.
All of it.
All of it. On everything I can see within 1 foot in the of the elephant.
Advantage.
Oh, yeah. 23.
Cart is well made. The wood could be, like, stronger, but it's made to be kind of, you know, lightweight, easy to carry around. So it's, I mean, doesn't really matter. Wheels are affixed on well. The actual, like, tether between the elephant and the cart is very firm, very strong, not likely to be broken easily by anything. It just seems like a well-secure, well-made cart. I mean, this is what good money pays for.
All right. And I feel like Blanche has done her job. She feels like this is pretty safe.
Master defense, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys slide onto the cart?
I mean, John, I guess it's a climb on into the cart, right?
John's already in the back drops down magically. I don't care. He climbs on it. It's cool.
Magic. We slide up on top of the elephant.
It does like a whole because it's like a fancy cart.
Sure.
It just made sounds. I don't know what that... You get on the cart. So the seats are cushioned. It's super comfortable. Just kind of comes back up. And the guy just says, all right, half hour ride to Zinda. Do you mind if I tell you about the sights you see on the way? This is, I know for you, Lady Master Defense Blanche Trudeau, and for you, Lord Jean Franklin Montelio, bearer of the banner of the Golden Bay. He's trying to stumble over the
I was going to say, I was like, David knows like, it. So.
David knows it. David forgot. David's tired. This is his fifth campaign in a row this week. he says the thing. He's like, but you, you two, guest, Jules LaRoche, I believe, right? You probably don't know much about this area.
Yeah, do your thing.
He's like, excited to do it. He's like, yes. It's almost like a jungle tour and like, you know, theme park as you're kind of going through.
And Jules doesn't want to hear it. He's letting him do it, though, because he can tell it brings him joy.
Hell yeah. I love that. Jules is bringing joy. As you're going, he's just like traveling, trotting along. It's just like, now if you look to your right here, you will see some of our local peli
parrots. And we'll call it there.
And some large, colorful birds with great beaks kind of take off from the trees. You're turning around to their places, and you see like this large moss-covered like crack in a large stone alongside of the road. Just like, oh, and be wary about around these parts at night. That cave to our left is the continuous homestead of many varieties of sturges. Which you might not see in your world. And he maybe goes on to explain that sturges are these nocturnal creatures that are basically bat mosquitoes. I don't know if I explained Sturge Man's joke before, but that's the joke. They're bat mosquitoes. He's Sturge Man. Mm-hmm. Bat mosquito. Okay, we're done. Anyway, moving on. He points out various fauna running through the trees. You know, maybe a tiger runs through at some point. He's just gestures to.
Tiger?
Tiger, they're cool.
a tire growling noise in the jungle.
Tire falls on.
It's an Arctic claw.
You see weird things.
That's a tire brand.
You're pointed to various flowers, some that seem to sparkle almost metallically in the bits of sunlight that filter through the canopy above, and you're just trotting along. He goes, up ahead we have the Pool of the Watcher, which holds the giant Cayman Ticklesh. I think I said that right. Ticklesh. Hey, it's a cool guy.
I don't like being tickled.
You look out and you actually see like, oh, again, like a jungle, you know, a amusement park sort of tour ride, you see like this long pond ahead, maybe about 50 feet wide, where you move to intersect it, and sort of vanishing off in distance in both directions. It's a very long pond. You see this stone bridge runs across it where the trail meets, continues on afterwards. And there's a fair crowd that has gathered on top of this bridge, kind of looking over the side at something. As you kind of get closer, you can peer over and see there's a just resting lazily at the surface of the pool is this massive caiman, maybe 25 feet long. You guys know what those are? They're kind of like short-snouted alligators.
Sure.
Yeah, just this big 25-foot long, almost alligator, a little more tropical, a little cooler. His glazed eyes just taking the crowd with mild interest, sort of floats around from nibbling like bits and bods of foodstuffs that are kind of tossed into the water in front of him.
How do you know it's a pond and not a river?
People have seen it. This is a major trail with your road we're going through here. It's all well explored.
Oh, very well.
I don't know what a river. It's a river. It doesn't. The water's not moving. I don't know.
Okay. I was just. You said it was like 50 feet wide and like really, really long.
It's a weird pond.
Sounds like a river.
Maybe it's probably open on our sides, like longer, but that's just like it narrows out and this one's canal, probably man-made even, just to make the bridge smaller. So it's kind of a, yeah.
Now I understand. You've taught me something new about my home world.
The more you know. actually, you probably know about Tickalosh. As he kind of goes on to explain, it's all
Do
stuff
I?
You know. Just like, stop it. Don't worry. Tickalosh here is seen as the guardian of the jungle in this region. He's a peaceful soul. He just gets his food from passerbys that wish to honor his presence, and you can see he's just chilling. I think even the rye proves like a shank of meat from his pouch. Just says like, I pass by here frequently, and I never deny my dear friend a snack. And Jean kind of laughs. So you're moving on. The crowd of people at the edge of the bridge kind of, some of them are tossing food into the water. But as the elephant approaches, the crowd sort of pushes along to the other side of the bridge, kind of getting out of your way because you're taking up some good space, you know. They don't want to get trampled. Rolling that one. So they clear a space and you get a good view of the great caiman just floating along the water's surface, maybe 5 feet down below the bridge. Jean's just like looking at it, at this eyes wide, like, ah, Tickalosh. Now, I remember coming here to see him as a hatchling, a tadpole, if you will, sir, back when Mother was still alive. I still can't believe she brought me to see him. Tickalosh aside, the great caiman near the Golden Bay have quite a taste for turtles, you know. You know. You're kind of rickling over the bridge as John's reminiscing. I think he's kind of looking back like, you know, sir, I actually spoke to the Bastai caiman, Don Incarnate, when I became a luminary. Quite a nice fellow, actually. He actually commented me on my BOOM! A great force smashes into the car, violently pushing it over the side of the bridge. The great maw of the massive caiman, Tickalog, comes bearing down on all of you. He roars, furious, crazed, his teeth gnashing down and shredding the cart's white wood as it topples into the water. The elephant on the bridge collapsing and sliding against the rough stone, the rider screaming as he is thrown into the pool. And the cart hangs by its tethers to the great beast of burden as the elephant slides to a stop, pressed against the raised edge of the bridge. Your cart dangles, half submerged, and I need a strength saving throw from all of you to see who stays upon it. But not this week.
Ah.
Because we'll call it there!
What the fuck is this magic?
What the fuck, David? What did you do?
I don't know. It was horrible.
I kind of liked it.
What the fuck?
I don't like how it's just in my right ear, though.
I'm so scared.
Ooh, this is pretty good.
Oh, it's more in the jungle music. Yeah, let's do that. That's fine. That's just music. Okay, we'll do this. Hopefully it doesn't... Ooh, what
this is very
did
Avatar.
That? Yeah, but what fucking did that thing? I want to know so bad. It was like every sound effect went off at once.